Morena Sorait, welcome.
Morena.
Our guest has written a sweeping debut novel about three generations of South Asian women and the lasting and devastating impact secrets can have. Ama was initially written as part of Soraya de Silva's Masters in Creative Writing at the University of Auckland, for which she won the inaugural Crystal Arts Trust Prize in 2021. Readers move between 1950s Singapore, 1980s Invercargill, and modern-day London and Melbourne to understand how three women have been shaped by events and culture and driven apart by circumstances and misunderstanding. Sarade is a Sri Lankan Pākehā writer, actor and producer. She was also the co-host of RNZ's podcast and video series Conversations with My Immigrant Parents, which I can highly recommend to anyone who has not discovered it. Usually based in Tamaki Makaurau, Auckland, she is with me today in the Wellington studio. Welcome again.
Thank you.
Great book. Brilliant writing.
Great.
I love succinct sentences. I love single lines that just stop you in their simplicity, and yet they're layers under the simplicity. So can I just get that out?
Okay.
From someone who can't write a parking ticket.
No, I'm sure. That's not true.
But can read. How long has the story been with you?
The story, I guess, has been with me for my whole life, as many, I'm sure, debut novels have been with the writers. The writing the actual book took 4 years, though. Yeah.
Right in the, forgive me, going to the back pages, the acknowledgements, you acknowledge your granny.
Mm-hmm.
And one feels her as a presence here.
Yes.
How so?
Yes. My gran is definitely a presence in the book. My gran died in 2019, and I was distraught. Obviously, as every, you know, all of our family was. Not that her death was super unexpected or extremely traumatic or anything. She was just a really important, amazing person. And I think that I needed to still talk about her without sort of bringing the temperature of the room down every day. And writing a book that allowed me to imagine a person like her and go to places that she went to helped me sort of feel like I was still close to her in some way, I think. Mm. Yeah.
Do you find like, and we should be clear here, this is fiction.
Absolutely.
Characters are fiction.
Yes.
But some of the settings, the generational experiences perhaps, changes and differences and understandings between generations would be familiar. So I want to be really specific about that. But did you find in exploring some of these characters that you were also doing some of that internal intergenerational exploring yourself? Did you feel like you knew more about her and her generation or not?
I don't know, because I think part of the thing about the novel is that the characters, and I don't think this is a spoiler, the characters realise that, or you realise through reading that you can't really always know your mm-hmm. family. So I don't think that it showed, I don't necessarily know that I learnt a whole lot of new things or... It was more just that I could suspend myself in something.
Uh-huh.
You know,
I
started with all these things that I knew, all these people that I knew, these places, and then everything from then on is just completely made up.
Understood. So your comment about, as debut novels often are, is the classic, begin with something that's in your own DNA, literally, and that you know and that you care about.
Yes.
And then the imagination, the characters take over.
Yeah, and that's the joy of fiction, isn't it? Mm-hmm. Like, it's so much more freeing, because a lot of the work I did before writing this book was, documentary or observational. And you're so tethered when you do that kind of work, obviously, to what's actually happening in front of you. So fiction, you can just make up anything you want. Yeah.
And it has its own alchemy. Are you one of those writers who found the characters told you what was going to happen, not the other way around? Or did you have a bit of a plan.
Before I wrote the book, I would hear authors say that and I'd be like, come on. Like, I didn't really buy it. And then, I guess I was a bit. It's more just that when you write into someone over so many pages for so long, you start to pick up, their rules, I think.
It's a bit like a relationship. You begin to know them at a level you didn't know at the start.
Yeah, it might be. I sometimes struggle with words like alchemy in relation to art making, or maybe I have hang-ups of actors talking about their craft in this very frustrating way because...
It's work.
It's just work, isn't it? Yeah, and it's practice, and it's technique, and it's a lot of, like, repetition all the time, and it's just, there's not really anything...
magical about it.
I don't know. I mean... I don't know. I think sometimes that word to me takes away the actual sweat of it, which I think is really... you want that.
How important was that master's course in setting you on the path to this novel and brilliant tutors you have on that course as well?
And Paul
also,
is amazing.
Again, without wanting to sort of point fingers at what matters the most, that kind of constructive critiquing and criticism of work, was that an important foundation for this?
Certainly, yes. Also, the deadlines and the time that doing a master's forces you to put aside, because I don't know... You know, of course, a lot of people want to write something long form, but when do you ever have the time, and when are you forced to actually make the time to do that? Yeah. And it was really challenging. Like, I had to move back home. I had to, like, fit a lot of other work around it to still be able to sustain myself. Like, it wasn't easy. But, I think more than my tutor, Paula Morris, was amazing. And yes, the critique is really important too, but I think the deliberate act of it was almost more important.
Sit down and write.
Yeah.
Put it first. Work.
And you're accountable to people. You have these deadlines at this time. You have to get it done.
Yeah.
Yeah.
All right. Can we meet some of these characters, please? Mm-hmm. The women of three generations in Ama. You be the judge of how much we do or don't go with where things get to. But let's meet them. Shall we begin with Josephina, who's the first generation?
Sure.
And the setting in Singapore is interesting. Can you give us some context to that?
Yes. So when we first meet Josephina from Josephina's perspective or Josephina's world, so we see Josephina first through her daughter Sathara's eyes, but when we are with Josephina, we are in 1950s Singapore. She is a child with very little agency. She's very vulnerable, and she's living in this house with her mother and her father and her grandmother, who was the only person she feels safe with. Yeah.
How much detail are we going to go into what happens in her young life?
I don't know. I think it is on a lot of the blurbs, I guess, so we can talk about it. Josephina is sexually assaulted in her as a very young person, which is horrible. It really changes everything in her life, in her family's life, her family's lives. It dictates the course of the novel, really. Yeah.
And the skill with which you write this, the first time it happens and she discovers that she is a person to be sold, right?
Hmm.
And you write of her experience in an extraordinary manner. And this is the skill throughout the novel. We feel like we go where these characters are, uncomfortable as it is. There's an awful inevitability about her situation, isn't there?
I think so. I think she knows, this character knows, she suspects what her worth is, she suspects what her uses are, she suspects that the people who are supposed to care for her don't. So when it happens, it is like a confirmation of something she wished wasn't true.
Let's meet Sathara,
mm-hmm.
who is her daughter, and this is a migration story and an immigrant story as well. Let's meet her and where we are in time and place with her story, told through her eyes.
Yes. So Sathara's story starts in Invercargill in the 1980s. And it's her family unit is herself, her younger brother Suri, and her ama, who is Josephina. They've been in Invercargill for, I think, about 5 years at this point in the book. And they have they're still in some ways getting used to the place, but Sathara actually has a pretty nice thing going on at school. She has friends she really likes. She's aware that Suri isn't quite in the same, isn't quite as like acclimatized to the place, but she doesn't know really how bad things are until this, yeah, this first chapter in the book.
These themes are universal as well in many ways. The abuse that can happen when it's decided that a girl is to be sold, the racism that happens, it is such a shock. Can be such a shock the first time.
Mm.
This is a lot about first times. The first time you find out how the world is going to behave towards you.
Yeah, I think there's something I wanted to show about, like when they arrive, when this family, this brown family arrives in Invercargill, they realise that what is normal to them isn't normal here. Something about the awful collision of that, like realizing that your context isn't not even respected, but like it's not even known in this new place. Like people can't place you; they don't have any understanding of you. I don't know. There's something so lonely about that that I wanted to try and show.
Lonely, and again, over time, one can construct a narrative for oneself about this, why it happens, how wrong it is, share it with others. But the first time, the early time, it's just lonely. It's just like WTE. Sexuality also is relevant here, and perhaps can we introduce
Annie?
Brother who becomes
becomes
uncle to Annie. So we're on to the next generation now. Annie is Sithara's daughter. And when we meet her, she's off to London to do what?
So the novel starts, yes, with Annie in London, and she has shown up completely unannounced on her uncle's doorstep. excuse me, she's never met him, and he doesn't know that she's here, and she has a whole lot of questions that she wants to find some answers to. Yeah.
This is where we can get to the separations that can happen, the misunderstandings, and what else plays a part in the estrangement that's within this family?
I think stubbornness. I think that awful gap between what you want to say to someone and what you feel safe enough to say to them. It's really a lack of vulnerability that means the family stay separate from one another for so long. It's almost like you watch them, you know that they could give each other so much more if they were only, I don't know, able to take like the first step or something, or to trust that it would be received. Yeah, I think what stops them from being together is the sort of very frustrating stubbornness.
Each is carrying their own trauma as well. Josephina's, and then with Annie and Sithara, there is a dysfunctional marriage that impacts both of them. What is the relevance of people carrying trauma that others know, that whether it's whether it's known and discussed or not discussed, it's part of you?
What's the relevance? I don't know. Not sure what the relevance is. I think trauma is something that is not, I mean, I know this isn't a new idea. This is, you know, a lot of people know this and talk about this, but the things that happened to people, whether or not they talked about it, if they brought you up, it's somewhere inside you, because them talking about it or acknowledging it is almost irrelevant because it affected them, and so it's going to affect you. I think that is sort of how I see trauma, and I think that's how trauma kind of manifests in the book. Yeah. Mm.
Each generation, of course, is living in a different era, a different place, dealing with different situations, but also different expectations.
Mm.
Could you speak a little to that between perhaps Annie and her mother, you know?
Mm, different expectations. Yeah, I think that's a real... With Annie and Sathara, that is a real first-gen, you know, and migrant thing. Like, what... So in my experience, like, the first generation, the generation who were born here, their parents weren't born here. I think we, because that's me, you know, we're a lot angrier. We're a lot, we feel entitled to things in a different way to our parents. We look at something... This is not everyone, obviously. I'm generalizing. It's not that those feelings aren't present in the generation before us. It's that we may feel cemented here in a way that allows us the freedom to question things.
Do you think there's kind of a gratitude burden sometimes on first
absolutely,
generations here,
absolutely.
And a need to make oneself small,
yeah.
and to what is the word? Not acclimatized. Goodness, it's gone out of my head.
I agree with what you're saying.
Yeah,
a gratitude
yeah.
burden. I think that's,
yeah.
I find that really interesting to notice. And you know, I think that gratitude is useful because this, you know, as migrants, we are lucky to be here. This land doesn't belong to us.
Well, that's true for
Tangata Whenua.
Most
yeah.
of us, not
yes.
just first and second
yes,
generation.
Yeah, absolutely.
Migrants. Yeah.
Yeah. So I think the gratitude is not misplaced or anything, but it is interesting exactly what you're saying about the ways that you might shrink yourself because of it.
Assimilation is the word I'm after.
Sure.
Right. And by second generation, is there more of a sense of, well, I have the right to be who I am and not to fit in? Is that generalizing again?
No, I mean, I don't think so. It's also what you see your parents put up with, and you wish they hadn't. It's not always, I think, yeah, what you're talking about is that's not always a reaction to the society at large. You know, it's a reaction to your parents and what you wish they had done or been louder about, or, you know, I feel like people will be able to relate to this, like when your parents sometimes tell you about things that they went through and they have this sort of cavalier attitude about it, or they brush it off or they minimize it, and you're hearing it and you're like, this is horrible. Like, I can't believe you went through this. How are you still, like, how did you go on after that? But they didn't have the room or the freedom to make a fuss about it in the way that I certainly do, you know? So it's that as well. Maybe you feel like they're owed something and you're trying to come collect it for them. I don't know.
We have the three stories of the three women then, in part told through their perspectives and part told through others' perspectives. And we won't come to how things resolve, Sarage. But for you as a writer, how complex was that? Do you know how you were going to get to the end of this book?
Do you mean the structure or the story?
The story.
Did I know how I was going to get to the end of the book? I knew what the point of the book was, and that's how I found my way to the end. I'm not a writer who plans out things. I need to know why I'm writing something, but I don't need to know the location of the next scene before I write it. I like to find my way through things. I think Zadie Smith talks about this, like macro or micro writers. I'm not sure. I don't know what her term is, but she has a really good way of talking about it, where she says that, you're either a writer who plans everything out, or you're a writer who finds it through the, you know, and it's neither here nor there in terms of quality. But I just am, yeah, I'm someone who needs to write it to know where physically it's going. So yes and no. Like, I knew what the feeling at the end of the book would be, or what I wanted it to be, but I didn't know what the situation would be.
Sarah De Silva is our guest. Amma is her debut novel. You're listening to 9 to Noon with Catherine Ryan on RNZ National. I think, yeah, launch last night, got to launch tonight. Like, what does it mean? How does it feel to be at this point? Answer whatever, you know.
That's a good question.
What matters about this moment?
Oh, what matters about this moment? What matters is that I did, I don't know, my community justice, or I did the people who relate to the book proud, or that there can be some recognition for people in the work. I would say that's what matters, yeah. Mm.
And some of those themes, I mean, we've touched a little on things like cultural perspectives potentially also on sexuality, say, or on your role in life, or the way you should be. These are broader themes. They remain rich themes for future writing.
Mm-hmm. Do you mean, what remains good themes?
Again, without wanting to get into the detail, sort of
the queerness of the book?
Yeah,
or?
Yes.
Yeah.
Yes.
Yeah. I'm always going to be writing about queerness, I think, as a queer person, or everything I do is going to be related to that. I don't think I'm ever going to run out of things to write about.
And the experience, again, of racism, which is a theme of the book, but I know from listening to your excellent podcasts, we can't ever stop talking about the way it keeps impacting. And those different generations have a different way of approaching that, would you say?
Yeah.
You've spoken about your mother's tolerance of stuff that you would not tolerate, but you've also spoken of things that you may experience differently to her, for example.
Mm. Yeah, we have definitely different experiences of that. I agree we should never stop talking about incidents of racism or racist systems, but it is also good to learn how to, for me, I'm always relearning how I talk about things, where I place myself, how loud I should be about something, and when I should, when I should shut up and listen. But it really is an evolving thing. And the older I get, the more interested I am at looking at a system, and the less interested I am at looking at all these distracting microaggressions.
Okay.
Yeah.
So some of the stupid things that people say or do, or some of what you will infer from what they've said, and they think they're making a compliment, and you're thinking you are exposing your racism.
Yeah.
You're less likely to react to that, perhaps, than to think about the bigger picture.
Yeah, I think so. I mean, you know, I can't remember who's, I'm going to misquote, but I don't know who says it, but like talking about racism as a distraction, like, or talking about these small incidents, of course they matter, they affect us for all of our lives, but we are, if we get distracted by them, or I don't know,
they can end up disempowering, right? Or wasting energy?
They can end up, if we're always focusing on these interpersonal things and we're not focusing on the things that allow them to, you know, proliferate, then, yeah, I think that's sort of wasted energy. I hope I'm less angry as I get older and more focused.
Hmm. Where is your creative force being focused once these launches are done? What's so many, you know, so many strands to it?
Yeah.
Where are you at the moment?
Well, I'm hoping that I can write a second novel at some point in my life. So I would like to try and figure out how I can do that. It takes, as we said before, when we were talking about the master's course, it takes a lot of time, it takes a lot of money, and a lot of sort of focus. So I need to try to get all those ducks in a row so that I can do that again.
I praise the writing. I could read any number of sentences out where I just stopped. And again, the simplest sentence often has the most layers. That's the skill.
Hmm.
of a writer. Have you found not just your voice, but have you found your writing style? Did you have to chisel away like hell at that, or was
absolutely.
It?
Absolutely. Yeah, I did have to chisel away like hell at that. You can only really be the kind of writer you are, though. You know, like you. Maybe I was trying to write like someone else beforehand, or maybe I had a different impression of myself as a writer beforehand. But I mean, the same way that I feel like when I talk to you, I struggle to speak in long sentences because I
great.
I am. I do. You know, when I answer questions, I think I tend to like answer short. I really have to force myself to expand on the things that I'm saying to make something like this, you know, like useful. So yeah, I do.
It's innate.
I love a short sentence.
It's innate. Short and perfectly formed. Congratulations. Thank you for
coming in.
Sarai De Silva, Amma is the book. Tell me the publisher.
Moore Press.
Moore Press.
Under Hachette, yeah.
Ka kite.